Welcome to Modular March. I'm Andy, this is Robbie, and we are The Roll-Up.
Modular March is an educational experience about all things modular. Enjoy.
Modular March, hosted by The Roll-Up and Modular Media. I'm here with Robbie as well as Rushi from Movement Labs. Welcome to Modular March, Rushi.
What's up, guys? Pleasure having me. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Good, man. Finally recovered from Denver, and you're just back on the conference circuit. I can't imagine. So, props to you.
Yeah, it's always conferencing. Yeah, thanks for having me. I think I'm going to go through kind of deck quickly, kind of explain what we're doing in Movement, and then kind of open it up for more discussion.
That works. That sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah. So Movement's building M2, move-based zero knowledge role for safe blockchains. Each kind of agenda, we'll walk through the glossary, give a context, problem solution, architecture, and the kind of where the future is headed. So M1 is our main decentralized sequencer network. Basically, the validators take the token to participate in sequencing for layer two. M2 is the main product, which is the move layer two on Ethereum. A VM is essentially an operating system where smart contracts can run and exist on a blockchain. The EVM is a piece of shit. The Movement SDK is a software kit to execute smart contracts. The Move VM, for those who aren't familiar, was designed by Facebook in the DM days to essentially power the Facebook blockchain, which is DM and Libra project. It's split off into Aptos and Sui, which were the two main DM programming languages and the DM projects. And then our thesis is we wanted to bring the Move VM to Ethereum. I'll touch more on the benefits of Move shortly. Fractal is our even compiler, so we remain end-to-end even compatible. And then zero knowledge proof. Zero knowledge proof. A DA layer is essentially a layer to some called either two, which cuts down the gas fees that we're seeing with mainnet Ethereum today. So some context, every year there's $4.5 billion lost in smart contract hacks. To date, there's been $7.6 billion hacked so far. This increases the barriers to entry because of large learning curves, $100,000 of auditing fees. The velocity of production today is very, very slow. And that if I want to build a consumer app in Web2, I could do that in a dorm like Mark Zuckerberg did and build a new Facebook. If I wanted to do that in crypto, it's very difficult to do so because I have on-chain dollars. So if there's an issue with my code, that can lead to millions of dollars being lost and losing my entire customer base. So security is actually the most important thing when designing perfect distributed systems. Here's a breakdown of kind of the source of smart contract hacks. Notably, a lot of these are smart contract integer overflows, re-entity attacks, kind of things that can be prevented if you have better resource safety, type safety, memory safety, and smart contracts. Again, touching on like move language, both done by DM, Libra. It brings in resource-oriented programming, supports full verification, and here's some comparison between Slurry developers and Move developers. I like to say that Move developers is kind of the first year of Solana, where it took a few years to kind of kick up and kind of build up its brand. I think Move is actually accelerating faster, A, with the market, and then B, developers, especially gaming developers, really love Move. So can we enable smart contract safe execution within Ethereum? Can we move to Ethereum? Yes, and that's how Movement is designed, a move-based rollup on Ethereum. Essentially, there's two main types of rollups. You have optimistic rollups, which use fraud proofs. You have challenge periods. And you have zero knowledge proofs, which use validity proofs and are fast, but are computationally expensive. We are using a zero knowledge rollup. M2 makes the most sense because you have the move execution environment with safety. You have Ethereum for liquidity and activity. You have ZK proofs for ability to prove on Ethereum settlement layer. So we're using ZK fraud proofs right now, and we're working on setting up a ZK move VM to kind of scale up from there. Here's the architecture. So we have the Movement SDK living on top of the main blockchain. You have proof of marketplaces kind of providing the zero knowledge proofs for the rollup, and you have British smart contracts and verifier smart contracts on L1. So end-to-end rollup framework.
Just real quick, Rishi there. been hearing a lot about like these decentralized prover networks. When it comes to proving for M2, like, are you guys going to do a lot of that in-house, or are you planning to kind of give kind of like Succinct or Jevolut or some of these other teams the ability to bring in their network as well?
We're working with Zero right now, just because that's the one that makes the most sense for our architecture and the one that's progressed the mostly as of recently. So we have Banzai, obviously, for the proving network, and then we have our ZK proposition generated from Zero itself. We're looking at other options as well, but at the moment, Zero makes the most sense for us.
Gotcha. So they basically have like an in-house marketplace of provers and some sort of like auction mechanism, which enables the best, most efficient execution.
Yep. I would say still pretty early. Banzai is still pretty early stage. There's a few other designs that are coming out, like we touched on like Evolut, that can provide kind of superior proof of marketplace, but I think those are a few months out, whereas we're looking for something right now.
Gotcha. Cool.
This is what SDK. We support both Solidity and Move contracts. I think the biggest issue in next-gen blockchains is they focus developers to just write their own language without providing backwards compatibility and legacy compatibility for existing EVM code. So that's why full end-to-end EVM compatibility, so we call it parallelized MEVM, where we support Move and EVM at the same time. How the EVM transpiler works, you have a Solidity script, you parse it to an abstract syntax tree, a tree, which is essentially AST, break down the language, and then you go to an intermediary language called Yule through semantic analysis, and you map that to Move opcodes. Long story short, you take Solidity script, hit 145 opcodes, map it to 54 Move opcodes, and then run the Move bytecode in the VM. So you have Solidity script mapping down to Move bytecode, enabling it to parallelize, as well as have the provers built in. So the decentralized sequencer, I think most L2s are like kind of flawed in this network today, where centralized sequencers simply don't scale. We will have a decentralized sequencer off the bat. This is because we want robustness. We don't want central points of failure. We want latency protection MIB, censorship resistance. And then two key questions here. How do sequencers reach agreement? How are sequencers chosen? We use Snowman Consensus, which comes from the Avalanche ecosystem, which is a leaderless BFT consensus mechanism. It's a Nakamoto consensus. It's a Snow family consensus. It's similar to Avalanche consensus, but we have toll ordering built into our consensus model, and it's completely separated from execution, so it's only used for sequencing.
Yep.
So I think one of the main benefits is like all these layer twos are kind of printing money with centralized sequencers, and there's no incentive for them to ever decentralize sequencer, which is generally bearish. Like decentralized sequencers a BDB play. What M1 does is it's built into layer two itself. Like Optimism is already doing this with our superchain. Arbitrum is working on this as well. ZKSync is working on this as well. Every major layer two is going to have their own decentralized sequencer. For those sequencers, the validator shake the token to participate in sequencing, so that you have like just a nothing at stake problem, because it works like L1 where you have slashing available while still providing security for the layer two. So having economic incentives built into the layer two itself.
Yeah, because the idea with Arbitrum and Optimism and other kind of L2s, I think StarkNet kind of pushed this a little bit now with you're able to use Stark for gas and they have staking. But like basically up to this point, there's been just governance tokens as L2 tokens, which don't really serve much.
Which are like meme coins, because they don't actually do much. So in order to have some token utility, I think staking and eventually fees is important.
Yeah.
Kind of what sequence network is built up. You have DA layer, so the sequence network connects to Celestia. You have full node compatibility for the sequencers, and you have provers that can connect the sequencer. So one thing we're also working on is mempool monitoring. So there's a world where you can actually use the sequencer to monitor the mempool. If there's attacks coming into the mempool, we can actually like reorder the transactions and slash like hacker attacks or slash risk feedbacks in the mempool itself. So you have additional protection even beyond the VM itself. Something like ZK Marketplace, obviously the provers generate proofs. The issue is that it's computationally expensive. Right now, our current architecture is using FlockET2 for the Move VM. We like the ZK, like the current DevNet and TestNet is going to be ZK fraud proofs, which is an intermediary step. But long term, we're looking at a FlockET2 implementation for the Move VM, which has a cursor proof generation But that's more of like a R&D project. In the short to midterm, it's just going to be a ZK fraud proof implementation with Rizero. The layer one and seven layers of Ethereum, you have a validating bridge contract, you have the native move and EVM clients. Let me walk through this. So the intermediate goal of movement is M2's optimistic rollup using ZK fraud proofs. You have execution, which is movement, SDK, which is move VM. You have sequencing with M1, Ethereum as settlement, Celsius DA, and you have Rizero for ZK fraud proofs. Where we're trying to go off this, with SDK, we're trying to build out more fractal adapters so we can keep up to date with all the Ethereum standards that are being pushed every day. You have M2, which would be a fully end-to-end ZK rollup. We're trying to build like a whole ZK move VM in-house, which is obviously computationally expensive and pretty ambitious, but something that we're dedicating some resources to. You have move stack, so we actually have a few rollups looking to launch your own move rollups, notably even some within the bear chaining system, which are pretty funny. So we'll have move rollups on Ethereum as well as other chains. We just announced Gamein, which is a move rollup on BNB chain. So move will come everywhere. And the end vision is the movement network for modular move-based rollups. And kind of where we're getting at is it's more than just infrastructure for us. We believe in security. That's our main narrative. I think everyone today is pushing the parallelization narrative. Everyone's saying speed, speed, speed. My thesis is that's a Lamborghini without brakes. Just because you have 20,000 TPS or 15,000 TPS, the difference isn't 15K, it's a 20K TPS, really. We're barely doing 2K TPS in today's market. It's really who can provide the best user experience and who can stop the $4.5 billion loss of every smart contract hacks. And Move is the only VM on the market that's remotely able to even address this. And our thesis is we want to bring it to Ethereum and stop the attacks we're seeing today while providing user experience to builders. Yeah, that's it.
Sweet. All right, so just to clarify some of the kind of design choices here. So effectively, the M1 is not movement trying to create its own settlement layer. It's movement using Snowman for shared sequencing for consensus, but still settling to Ethereum. Why did you choose Ethereum instead of going like the Initia route or the other protocol route and design your own settlement layer as well?
I think one of the main benefits or one of the reasons why we started movement is me and Cooper, I built the first Dex and Aptos. I co-founded the first yield aggregator. The biggest issues as building a new system is liquidity, like acquiring liquidity, which is why the layer 2 design on Ethereum makes a lot of sense because you inherit decentralization, you inherit liquidity of Ethereum, you can native ETH bridge to the DEX. So for example, that same DEX that launched on top of Aptos can now launch on top of us, have native ETH compatibility, have native EVM compatibility, have USDC day zero, have TIA, Atom, IBC assets. So the DEX can actually have valuable assets instead of just like APT and testnet tokens. Yeah. So the main thing is liquidity and like tokens that actually matter.
Yeah. And like the infrastructure that comes with EVM and kind of the Ethereum development. Now, one thing here as well with the kind of shared sequencing model, I guess we can just park it here. So how are you going to make money? Arbitrum is printing money. Optimism is printing money with their centralized sequencer. How are you guys going to turn your shared sequencing network into a sustainable model?
Well, I think all L2s are kind of going to the bottom where DA is getting obsessively cheaper. All DA makes it really cheap. So like Manta was able to cut down their fees 99%. And then like even with alt VMs, that even comes down lower because now you have parallelization. So sequencer, centralized sequencer fees never made sense for us because our fees can be less than a cent. Kind of the way that works is similar to layer one, where you have the validators take a token to participate in sequencing. So it's actually a buy pressure because the validators need to have a token and eventually be a permissionless network. So validators can take a token, get rewards, get sequencer fees, and then use that to run more and more nodes. And as for kind of the gas level, the percentage of fees will be distributed back to the validators as well as the foundation itself will be able to retain some of the fees.
So L2s as a business model are like that era is kind of coming to somewhat of an end as far as like this like extremely profitable, like retroactive optimism grants, et cetera.
Well, no, I think retroactive optimism grants is completely separate. Like I think optimism did a great job instead of incentivizing builders, incentivizing creators. I think what's coming to an end is the $5, $6 fees that you're seeing on layer twos. People want to have fees that are less than 5 cents, less than 2 cents, what they're seeing on Solana and Sui. And our thesis is we want to bring it to Ethereum.
Gotcha. I think Rob's got something. My just last one before Rob takes us on a math journey is, are you guys really a roll-up if you're using Celestia for DA?
Yeah, I think the word L2 roll-up is so like mistake, so gone. I try to stay a vote out of the debate. I think it doesn't really matter what you call yourself. I like to call myself a roll-up. If you want to call me a roll-up, you want to call me a Validium, you want to call me an L2, call me whatever you want. I think most people are kind of coming up to the word that roll-up is more kind of universal. L2 is probably just mainnet like roll-up on Ethereum. But there's so many different definitions today. I don't think it makes sense to kind of categorize anymore.
Rushu, what is the counter argument here? Like, what's the argument for the EVM that EVM proponents are circulating at the moment?
Yeah, I think like the EVM will always have a place today, right? It's like legacy code. If you want to use Aave, if you want to use like Lido, EVM is probably the best place to do it. But we're not optimizing for the 1,000 users that we have in chain today. We're optimizing for the million users that we want eventually. When those millions of users come, when my mom uses crypto, the biggest thing that like people talk about is, oh, doesn't crypto get hacked? Isn't it scammy? Isn't it rocky? And how we can solve against that is making it more secure for users and builders to both use at the same time. A, for builders to ship products faster and users to not get hacked. So the narrative is really, if we want the million users to come, it's not going to be the EVM. If you want to still use the blue chip DeFi apps, where there is liquidity, is legacy code, that's probably going to stay on the EVM where most liquidity will be. So kind of our thesis is combining best of both worlds. We will shill and support and encourage the growth of Move over the next 4 to 5 years. But in the next 6 to 12 months, we still acknowledge that EVM has liquidity and the network effects and kind of the most important network right now. So we support both at the moment.
Okay. Let's say that we see more of these legacy DeFi apps continue to graduate into the app chain thesis, like we've seen with DYDX and GMX. Like, you know, let's say Aave and Lido decide to also go that route. What does that mean for the EVM?
Yeah, if they have custom like app chains, if all these blue chip protocols, that makes it like more bearish that the EVM actually exists and like major layer two sub network effects. Because eventually like some of these protocols are going to realize that it's better to launch like a Move app chain or SVM app chain. The infrastructure right now is still pretty bare bones. But I think once us, Eclipse, and a few other groups are able to really launch over the next 6 to 12 months and provide role frameworks and compete with OP stacks and the kind of Arbitrum stacks and whatnot, we'll actually be able to, A, be complementary to OP stacks. So you can use a Move on an OP stack. You can use SVM on Arbitrum stack. Which allows these kind of builders to have their own clarity. I think Maker was looking at launching their own SVM fork, so they can now do that on layer two instead, which is exciting.
Yeah, I think another interesting point there is another interesting thing here is from what you've mentioned is these kind of developments of these different stacks and frameworks. I'm curious if you think that the majority of general purpose rollups will effectively be forced to launch their own rollup stack frameworks as a means to generate value or to remain relevant in the marketplace, or if there's another reasoning as to like why it makes sense.
I think there's like a few different arguments. I think like Scroll is focused mainly on layer two, building on DeFi exists for layer two. I think that's like there's gonna be a few market like differentiators. Like Initia is focused on rollup framework, bringing rollups to their ecosystem. We're predominantly right now focused on our layer two and building out the ecosystem first. So it's actually very complementary stacks. Like if you want to launch your own role framework, you probably go to a RAS provider because the infrastructure is best built with like Conduit, Initia, Caldera, these different groups. For us, we're focused on just being like a general purpose layer two, really going for like the Arbitrum optimism playbook where we have TVL on chain, have like a place for people to bridge assets to and have a lot of TVL on and have like a liquidity hub. I think like, there's going to be some groups that want to do roll-up stacks, like Scroll right now, I don't think is. But obviously, like ZK Sync is ZK Stack. It's going to be a competition of who can, A, be the best layer two in general purpose roll-up, and some people differentiate on the roll-up stack.
Yeah. With that, I think that the roll-up ecosystem is so nascent that there's almost been like a little bit of like, a forgotten quest here, which is like we're all just trying to scale Ethereum to make the Ethereum ecosystem as kind of broad and wide and impactful in the world as it can be. And right now it's almost like there's like a bit of like PvP happening amongst rollups. You've got like Blast sucking up all this TVL and all this Ethereum mainnet ETH being bridged to these rollups, and for some of it being locked, like in Manson's case for the campaign, some of it being just sticky because of the desire for these users to use applications. I'm curious about like your thoughts with regards to where the rollup ecosystem is now, and is there a misalignment of like kind of incentives or ideas versus like where we might be in a world of kind of more, let's say, abstraction of chain, of users knowing which rollup or chain that they're on and kind of how the incentives might kind of shift there.
I think like right now there's a lot of like L2s and there's different playbooks. You have like the Blast Manta playbook where you're locking up ETH and providing like essentially yield for builders and users as a service, while like other groups like what we're doing is providing user experience and kind of like trying to change like the EVM and gas fees that we've seen in the past. So there's gonna be a few like categories that are actually gonna come up. You're gonna have like yield bearing L2s, which are like the Manta kind of Blast of the world. You have like the main EVM layer twos like Optimism and Arbitrum, which has the most like TVL and kind of the early pioneers. You'll have the next gen layer twos, which is like us and Eclipse. You'll have like probably some gaming L2s like Zai Games, and like a few of the gaming L2s are coming out like Immutable. So there'll be a bunch of different use case specific L2s and bunch of like app specific roll-ups like Avo. The question now is like how do you bridge all those together and have like seamless user experience? So it's like going between tabs on my browser. I think there's going to be some like, I know Nier's working on chain abstraction, which is pretty interesting. Like the topic of chain abstraction is going to be really important. Like being able to go between rollups within like one click is easier said than done. You have atomic composability, you have different token standards. I think like Omni's working on something similar to that. But I think the next playbook after you have all these different rollups is creating an internet browser. So it'd be cool to see like a team come on and build like a Google Chrome for the modular stack.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. I think that a lot of these are kind of like fragmented now. Kind of a spicy one. Why would I choose to build on Movement when I can build on Eclipse or I can build on a different stack?
Yeah, so I think the main value, there's two main value props. A, we're fully even compatible. So if you want to have parallelization, if you want to have like high throughput and you want to keep even code, our stack is pretty much the only parallelized layer to the market at the moment. And the second version is more on the security side. So Move kind of differentiates from SVM such that it stops the $4.5 billion loss every year. It really is focused on security and driving home formal verification narrative. If you look at like how long it takes to do account checks in Solana to Sui, Solana takes like 2 pages of code, Sui takes like 10 lines of code, and the EVM takes like 5 to 6 pages. So even to like write basic simple code is much, much simpler. And the last bit is like Move was built by Facebook. It was built by the biggest consumer app in the world. If we are to bring in new Web2 developers, they're going to come to the Move ecosystem just because after some Sui, we're in the next 6 to 12 months into driving home adoption from Web2 backgrounds, which is pretty much the only ecosystem right now that's able to do that with their Web2 ties and traditional tech ties.
Yep. And then more on the why you decided to build using Move VM. I think that we can agree that a lot of the DA layers will kind of be commoditized in a sense all the way down to like the cheapest fees possible. And that a lot of the value in this modular stack could theoretically accrue to the best execution layers and the best kind of performant VMs. But what's to stop this the same thing effectively happening at the VM level in terms of this kind of commoditization, and how are you thinking about this?
Are you saying like what all the VMs be like the same eventually?
Yeah, like in the next couple of years, somebody might just come up with the next best one, right? And it just keeps kind of going.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be like better programming languages ever, like better programming systems. If you look at Web2, that's exactly what happened. You had JavaScript, which is like Rust in this analogy, and you had React, Vue, Angular. I would say like, that's like the Move VM, SVM, and other groups. And there'll probably be a better JavaScript framework that comes up. The question is, how do you drive adoption for it, and how do you get in the market? So any like Anon Wasi can like create like a language and then promote it, but it takes a lot of resources. It takes a big network. It takes a big community to drive home the adoption for the language. So I think Move is like the next iteration after SVM, and we haven't really seen any real competitors come up to the Move ecosystem. I think it's pretty much like, I wouldn't say perfect, but like it's hard to beat the Move programming language. It's, you have the speed, you have the security. There's really no areas of issues that a new programming language could take over. But I'm sure there'll be like other iterations in the next 2 or 3 years that was claiming better than Move. And it's going to be depending on like, can they drive adoption? Can they bring home users? There's been like, obviously like, you had Flow blockchain, which had their own programming language. You had Fuel and some other groups that are trying their own programming languages. It's always difficult to drive adoption for those respective things. It really takes a full ecosystem effort.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding, Sway is a bit more purpose-built for blockchains than Move.
It's a hot take. I don't know if that's true. They might tell you that. But Move was designed to be built for Facebook's blockchain. It was designed for the DM and Libra project. I'm pretty sure that Sway and the language for Flow blockchain was a derivative of the DM project and derivative of the Move language. Don't quote me on that, but either way, I think Sway is a good language. It's a Rust-based language. Excited to see the launch and see what happens with the ecosystem.
What are some of the applications that you think will drive mass adoption?
I think social is like the main thing. Like for us, that's like the 6-year playbook. Like Facebook built this language. Our narrative is, okay, Facebook built this language. We should prioritize social and consumer apps. In the short term, it's DeFi and building like secure DeFi apps. So a lot of our interest in TVL is committed on chain is family offices that have a lot of ETH, couldn't commit in the past because of smart contract risk, and now they can deploy on top of layer two, restake it with Rio, Renzo, one of these providers, earn yield on it and not have to worry about it getting hacked, which is really exciting for those providers. So in the short term, DeFi security and secure DeFi strategies. In the long term, I think consumer and social apps is what's the most important thing. So like having a stable coin that you can send money throughout different social apps, having like on-chain gaming is really exciting. But I think that we're still a few years out for that.
Yep. I kind of just going to ask my last one before Rob might have one, which again is just another spice thing, but why do we need another general purpose L2?
That's a great question. I think, and like it's like the same thing with Web2 happened in the internet.com bubble. Yeah, like millions of websites, they're like a bunch of different websites, all forks of Amazon, all forks of like Walmart, and most of them died. I think that's what's happening with Web3 infrastructure right now. You're going to have all these thousands of rollups, this unraveling of tech stacks, and it's only like five that actually win. And in the next bear market, probably all these rollups that you're seeing are probably going to not make it. We're kind of phased out, and there's going to be like five strong teams that are able to A, manage your finances, but B, manage your existing community to withstand the bear. And that's actually why bear markets are good, because they wipe out the plethora of infrastructure AC, and only teams that make sense can actually scale.
So if we switch gears a bit to the application layer, like what are some of the applications that inspire you the most and that you can envision normies, your mom, grandmas using on the on-chain?
I think going back to the thesis for the DM project, it was the ability to send stable coin on Facebook. Imagine like instead of having to wire money to from like New York to Thailand, you could press on someone's Twitter bio or the Facebook bio and send money with like crypto in the background, stable coins in the back end. I think that's the end game vision for blockchains, that you can abstract away banks, abstract away centralized authorities. So something that gets me excited is when my mom uses Facebook, my family uses Facebook, instead of having to use like a third-party bank wire, which is really expensive, sending money to India, sending money to third-party countries and whatnot, we can now have it within the app itself. So if I want to send money to family, I can press on the username, wire them 10 USDC, but in the front end, it just shows like 10 bucks, nearest settlement, no fees, and just having security within the app end-to-end. So on-chain social, on-chain payments, and combining that gets me really excited.
Got it. So this is like an iteration of Facebook Marketplace, where someone goes to buy a couch from someone else, they have to bring some cash. But no, they can just kind of like put, almost like put funds in escrow and then unlock it if they are happy with the couch.
Yep, exactly.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that's aligned, Rob, with what Chao Wang was saying about this kind of barbell where the main use case for crypto right now is stablecoin payments and the other is like aggressive speculation, which is pretty interesting. Rushi, I guess like the last one from us is going to be about this kind of modular expansion roadmap. I think a lot of people are only aware of like Celestia and kind of like this DA concept, but I think a lot of people will be very surprised at this rise of these alternative VMs or next-gen VMs or non-EVM rollups launching. How do you see this like modular expansion happening throughout the rest of the year and then into 2025 with regards to each part of the stack kind of blossoming?
I mean, I called this like 3-4 months ago. 2023 was the year of the DA. 2024 is the year of the VM. We believe that the EVM kind of starts to get dethroned with the push of the Move VM, SVM, Alt VMs, people using different execution layers. I think it started with the Solana craze, people even like G to meme coins and seeing like how easy it was to send transactions on chain, not worry about gas fees. I think the transition to the Ethereum ecosystem as well, where people can use different VMs and use different tech stacks to scale user apps on top of Ethereum. So I think that's the direction I'm headed in. And that brings in new consumer use cases that probably starts off like meme coins, like random like meme coins on top of next-gen VMs on top of Ethereum. And people realize that instead of paying 20 and 30 bucks for gas on Ethereum, you can now pay like cents on the dollar and have better user experience. And that transition to games, even DeFi, I think that's exciting for the next 6 to 12 months.
And I know I said that was my last one, but I just have one last one. So we move, so DA is happening slash has happened. This non-EVM rise is going to happen. But similar to other rollups, Eclipse, et cetera, still movement settles to Ethereum. So the question is modularity, is this rise of modular blockchains, is this bearish for Ethereum or is it just further solidified its thesis as like the global settlement layer or like the most secure settlement layer possible for all modular chains?
I think it's bullish for Ethereum because it still remains a settlement layer. It's still like the safe value of money. People still want it for decentralization, security. So it is bearish. Yeah, fees decrease with DA fees and all VMs. Long term, that might mean that Ethereum itself is making less money. But the thesis is we're not optimizing for like 1,000 users making $1 million. We're optimizing for the billion users that make tens of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars on chain. In that world where we have all DAs and all VMs that you want the user experience, I would argue the people who made TCP/IP, who made the fundamentals of the internet, made a lot of money and still are profitable today because everything's built on top of them. So at scale, it is really important for Ethereum to adapt to all VMs and all DAs.
Got one more, Rushi. Is Ethereum money or is Ethereum the world computer?
I think it'd be both. I wouldn't say it's money. Like if I want to send money to my mom, I'm not gonna send her ETH. I'll probably send like USDC or like some structured way. So like in like a long-term meta, like a 10-year or 20-year landscape, I don't think it is money. I think it's like an investment vehicle. So people will invest in ETH as an index for crypto and Ethereum markets. But like, I'm not gonna send money to. I don't send like ETH to my friends really, unless I'm like aping into meme coins. I'll probably send stable coins and other like similar vehicles. I think it becomes an internet computer where people settle on top of it, use it for settlement, use it as kind of a core infrastructure layer. I'm not so sure about the stable like using it as money, maybe as an investment vehicle, but wouldn't say it's like a daily currency.
Got it. And last one. With 2024 being the year of the VM, any thoughts on Bit VM?
I'm honestly not too familiar with it. I don't really understand it. It's not my space. It's cool to see programmability in Bitcoin. I think I'm yet to see any use cases for it that besides like generating yield on Bitcoin, which is a great use case. Currently, Bitcoin sitting idle. If you can provide some yield to it and some DeFi strategies, that's cool. But beyond that, I haven't seen much application. I'm excited to see that, but I don't know anything about it yet.
Yes, so very early. Thank you, Rashid, for coming on, being a part of Top Modular March, and best of luck in London.
Yeah, thanks, man. Excited to have a Modular March.